Hello, I'm Erica McIntyre, Jason's Connections Content Director. Today, our founder, Jason Harris, will be speaking with Kim Wegman, co-founder of Epic Revolution, an organization that seeks to help neurodiverse teens and young adults find friendship, support, and solidarity. The ever-evolving group is community-oriented and sustained by friendships created through shared experience. Kim has been coping, regulation, and social relationships with the neurodiverse community since 1995. She also teaches yoga. Epic Revolution's unique developmental approach to therapy is youth-centered and based in trust and acceptance.
Great. Thank you for joining us today. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Jason and Erica. Well, I think Erica did a lovely job there of describing me and some of what I'm doing here out on the West Coast in Sacramento. I've lived here all of my life. And got into the field of autism in my very early 20s. I kind of really fell into it and then kind of geared my schooling in that direction because I was working when I was 21 for a school that was specifically for kids who were on the autism spectrum. And we were doing we were in the applied behavior analysis mind frame at that time, and I worked for a couple of different schools and also vendors as a consultant for many years, and then about 13 years ago, I decided that while ABA was, had its benefits in terms of its philosophy, it was leaving my clients and myself a little short. And slightly before I left these companies and went out on my own, I really fell in love with Stanley Greenspan and started incorporating much more of a floor time approach to the therapy that I was doing, which I think was already kind of intrinsic and very natural in me. And really started to see, just such wonderful results in that experience. The real building and deepening of relationship, of trust, of safety, and that's really my heart, my basis for the type of therapy that I'm doing in the neurodiverse community. It's relationship based, And it's born of a foundation of feeling safe and feeling accepted and worthy and trusting. And I do a lot of group type therapy, socialization, not socialization so much. It's more play-based type therapy that invites socialization amongst our population of young kids and junior hires and teens and even young adults who really do relate to feeling more isolated, who are looking for connection and looking to very much be in relationship, but have had a lot of struggle and vulnerability in that area, and so we get together kids that are like-minded, that have things in common, and wonderful things happen, as does in any kind of friendship and relationship. And then I also do some private work with some families, specifically in regard to kind of coping and regulation. But my heart is in play and bringing people together through that venue.
And you said ABA, just so can you, and then floor planning, can you tell our listeners what those two things are?
Okay, so ABA is Applied Behavior Analysis. It's a psychology or a philosophy that is often used specifically in the autism community as a means of therapeutic treatment. And it basically looks at reinforcement and punishment as what it is that shapes and informs human behavior. And so, the work that I was doing for many years when I was vendored through the school districts and states was, and state here, was more kind of oriented in positive behavioral support, PBS, or PBI, positive behavioral intervention, where the focus is more on creating positive, reinforcing experience to elicit certain behaviors. And then floor time is an approach that Stanley Greenspan, I guess you could say, developed. But it's very basic and simple. It's wonderful. It's child-led, relationship-based therapy. And he has a wonderful book called Floor Time and also The Child with Special Needs. And his approach, it has really become very much my own, which is to build trust and a sense of safety and security, to really build a positive relationship with the people that you're working with, so that there's a desire to learn from you. You establish a mentorship relationship, if you will. And the book Floor Time, it's called that because you're getting on the floor with little kids. You're following their lead. You're entering into their world. And then once they feel that sense of connection and trust as you've come into their world, then you start to invite them to share in some of your world as well, some of your reference and experience and perspective.
So it sounds like you do a lot of... That's really good. Thank you. It sounds like you work with a lot of children. Do you work with just children, or do you work with other age groups as well?
You know, I spent, probably the last 14 years working with children. And so many of my clients I had for so many years, and they grew up. They went into junior high, and they went into high school, and they started saying, high school is really hard. Junior high is really hard. They became more aware of their differences. They were feeling much more isolated than they had previously. And they were also kind of feeling like they didn't necessarily want to come to an office anymore. They wanted to have some friends and be in the experience of relationships. So many of the kids that I've known, for years have gone through all sorts of social skills training, but they've never actually had extended opportunity to just be in the messy and wonderful practice of relationship. And so I thought, high school was really hard for me. I have scoliosis, which is part of what drew me into yoga years and years ago as well. And I wore this back brace that went from my pelvis all the way up to the top of my neck. And I could really relate to what a lot of the kids that I was seeing, and they were growing up and in high school and junior high, and they were saying, this is so hard and I feel so weird and so different and so isolated. And I thought, I relate to that. I had that experience in high school too. And my saving grace during that time was my youth group. And it was a place where I felt a sense of community and belonging, and it was okay for me to have my back brace, and it didn't make me weird, and I felt very loved and accepted for who I was. And I thought, well, you know what? What? Gosh darn it, why don't we start a non-religious youth group founded on the doctrine of respect for oneself, respect for others, for junior high kids, for high school-aged kids. And then born of that was a young adults club. And some of the kids that were in our high school group started to age out and feel that some of the activities were a little juvenile for them. And so so the last 5 years, my focus has been a lot more with kids who are a bit older, kids who are junior high aged, high school aged, and the young adult community as well, which I love it. It's wonderful. I do still have a number of groups of younger kids, but I'm starting to call them Epic Junior, and we're just kind of prepping them to get them ready to enter into our larger group settings.
Now, that sounds amazing. Now, is it just people who are on the spectrum? It seems like a lot of people going through high school or even have it, or is it open to a lot of different people who can join your group?
That's a great question, Jason. You know, what we talk about within our clubs is that we are a group of people who identify as being neurodiverse. And so that is including, but certainly not limited to, people who identify with autism, also with ADHD or Asperger's or other language or sensory processing differences. So we have kids in the group who have diagnoses of autism. We have kids in the group who don't have any specific diagnoses, but who really just relate to wanting friends, feeling a little more outcast, struggling, you know, feeling more vulnerable when it comes to making those social connections. And we have kids in the group who have, you know, strong sensory processing differences and some language processing differences, but it is definitely a group I'm referring to all of our groups, really, but our high school group is our largest group, where usually each Wednesday night we boast around 30 to 40 kids. And you know, now that we've gotten larger, there are definitely groups that kind of click off, if you will, you know, where they connect with one another in very specific ways. You know, some of the kids who sit at various tables and draw and do art together, some kids who hook up their DS systems together and play that together, other kids who are more active and want to participate more in physical activities and sports. But it's definitely a group of alike individuals, people who are bright and beautiful and feel a sense of vulnerability socially. But they want very much to be in relationship. They are hungry for friends, and that's what EPIC is offering, a place to really be in that experience of friendship, of community, of belonging, and togetherness.
Yeah, so, and it sounds like people, even though they might come there for one reason, the friendships they're making are through interest, which is, you know, happens through a lot of different ways. For people, I mean, does that help translate what they've learned? And do people keep these relationships outside of EPIC, or do they make other relationships outside of EPIC by being able to build the confidence that they have in EPIC?
Well, that's another great question. Thanks for asking that. You know, that's really our goal, is to help to foster these relationships, you know, on Wednesday nights or Monday nights or whatever evening it is that we're meeting, but then for the kids to be able to carry that outside of the group and connect. And I have to tell you, my heart just burst open this weekend and was overflowing with so much joy. I was on Facebook, and I saw three of the girls who are in our teen group had all gotten together over the weekend and gone out to the zoo together and gone down to a little coffee shop down the street. And so I'm happy and excited to say that, yes, there is the furthering of friendship and relationship outside of the group. But I, you know, I've also really had the experience that is a vulnerability for a lot of the people that are in our community. It's harder to initiate, and it's harder to follow through with friendship outside of structured gatherings and meetings. And so one of the things that we started recently is a little club. We have a bunch of little clubs going, but one of them right now is called Movie Club with Friends. And our staff don't go to those meetings, but it happens once a month at somebody's house, a volunteer from the chosen. And then each month the kids that want to participate sign up, and we shoot out an email to the families, and once a month, all of the kids that want to participate go over to another one of the kids' homes. That kid picks out three movies, and then the group votes out of those three movies on which movie they want to watch together. The kid who's hosting has some movie trivia and some conversation starters, and it's basically a... The idea with Movie Club with Friends was really to create more of a bridge to get these kids from these, you know, groups and meetings into each other's homes and interfacing a little more intimately with each other. And so, yeah, we're seeing more connections in that vein. And also, you know, I'm also just so pleased to say that when when any human being, you know, and especially our kids, have the experience of feeling themselves belonging, feeling themselves accepted, and feeling that they have friends and community, there is an incredible surge of self-confidence. We have one young man who's on our leadership team in our teen group, and he's just a gem. And he does announcements at the beginning of group. He welcomes everyone. He also helps to facilitate and lead various games. And there's a lot of buy-in from the rest of the kids in the group when the teens in the group actually get up and, you know, lead a game. And you know, my cousin, her son goes to school with him. And he's actually on a sports team with him. And she said, I have to tell you, I have seen the most incredible transformation with this young man. I hardly even knew who he was before. All I'd see was him wearing his hood. His head was down. He didn't want to show his face. Recently, you know, he's been in our program for the last couple of years, and recently he got up in front of the school and with a couple of his friends did a skit. And this year he's running for student government. So it's, yes, I think that any time, you know, we as human beings connect with love and support and the nurture that comes in friendship, it has a wonderful effect. And you know, our hearts flower, and we are more able and more capable in our world because we feel the warmth of encouragement. You know, from friendship.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds incredible because, I mean, I know for me and some other people, some of it is the confidence that you have to be able to socially interact. So it sounds like as well as being able to make friends, it also gives these young adults and kids confidence to be able to feel like they can fit in and be able to do more as well.
Mm-hmm. We're seeing that too, and it is. It's just so exciting. And, you know, the neatest thing is, Jason, it's such a simple formula. It's just opening, creating the space, opening up our doors, saying, come, be a part of community. You know, we're not doing any kind of direct teaching. And we don't place any demands on any of the kids outside of this opportunity for a lot of natural learning that's born out of our creed for respect of oneself and respect of others and respect of the environment that we're in. But, you know, it's just a safe place to come and be. And it's so neat. You know, we had one kid for 8 months. You know, we have a little group called the Encouragement Team that's on our leadership team. And the kids that are on the sidelines, they go up to them and they invite them to be a part of things that are unfolding in the group. And we get together in a large group circle at the beginning of our meeting, and you don't have to sit in the circle. And he would sit in a table off in the corner. And every single week he'd get invited to come, and he'd say no. But he'd sit there over in the corner listening. And about 8 months later, of his own accord, he finally joined the meeting, started participating in the group circle, and ever since has been a part, you know. And I think that part of the secret to his successful joining of the group was really just honoring his need for his own kind of time frame with it. You know, that he didn't want to be forced into it, that he didn't want to be pushed into it, that he wanted to be able to make that choice on his own. He was still invited every week, but he wasn't forced to do it. And when he finally made the choice on his own to join and be a part of the group, it's something that really clicked, and it's something that he was able to, you know, he's still able to maintain. He comes, and he's always a part of the circle now. And so, you know, it's a simple formula, really, just holding the space. But we have a really beautiful group of staff who are not in any way, shape, or form meddling, you know, or demanding. Mm-hmm. They're really skilled in the way that they just come alongside and very quietly support the group. The group is it's teen run. The teens start out with the announcements. The teens run the games. The teens host the activities, and the adults are there for, you know, emotional support, for regulatory support. We're just kind of there on the sidelines watching this wonderful thing unfold and supporting it as it does. It's neat.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I have to ask just because I think it's interesting to compare and contrast, especially because of what's going on with it. How do you think this is unique or different from a traditional day program model, if you don't know what I'm talking?
Yeah, no, well, I think there are a lot of differences between our social club and our clubs and a day program in that the focus is entirely on being together, being in community, and fostering friendship. And then within that, there are all of these other things that are born of it, you know, self-confidence, a self-sense, you know, a deepened sense of self-worth. There's more self-awareness that is born of all of that. But that is our emphasis purely. It's to bring these kids together for so that they can have a sense of solidarity, of support, and really feel themselves in community. You know, right now we've got a couple of youth groups, and during the school year we just meet for an hour and a half in the evenings, and then during the summer we meet for 2 hours, and we meet for each group once a week, and then we do minimally a once a month activity or community outing, and that can vary from, you know, driving race cars or going miniature golfing or having a scavenger hunt at the mall. And then we've got a variety of clubs, from book club to movie club with friends, that are running, that help to kind of keep maintaining some of these relationships that are budding and blossoming in the large group setting. But that's we're kind of purist in that sense. This group is for relationship and friendship. That's the heart of it. But there are a lot of other really great things that come out of it.
And you've talked about you having scoliosis. Do you think that sort of has helped you with the empathy part of what you all do?
I think so. And, you know, also my uncle, who I grew up with, he's has now passed away. But I grew up with him, and he was also on the autism spectrum. And oh, what an amazing young man he was. He really grew up with all odds against him. In fact, they told my grandmother when he was born that he should be institutionalized, and she refused. And she, what an amazing woman she was. She really encouraged his independence. And while he couldn't drive, he rode his bike everywhere. He took public transportation everywhere. He worked for Pride Industries, and he helped those who were even less fortunate than he was. He worked a lot with people who had major physical disabilities and took them into the community and was a part of supporting them. He had all of his life an incredible love of the fire department, and he always wanted to be a firefighter. And he wasn't able to be a firefighter because of his challenges. But he availed himself to the fire department here in Carmichael all of the time. And he would do volunteer work. He would ride up there. All of the firefighters and the chief were incredibly familiar with him. He had a bunch of scanners in his house. And I can remember when I was young, we'd get phone calls from Uncle David, and he would let us know, okay, in about 3 minutes, truck number such and such is going to drive right past your house, and they're going to this emergency. And he would tell us what it was because he had heard the information on his scanner. And sure enough, 3 minutes later, there the truck would come past, and we'd wave at them or go outside. They'd honk back at us. When he passed away because of an aneurysm, the fire department gave him a firefighter's funeral. And they had an entire procession down the whole street of fire trucks. They presented the flag to my grandmother. It was an incredibly moving experience. And what I learned, and, you know, my Uncle David, he lived independently. You know, he moved out when he was in his early 20s. And I think what I learned so much from him. I learned that anything is possible. And while the world might dissuade you and say that you're not able, you can't do this, and you're not capable when you when you're persistent, when you put your whole heart into your life and you try your best. Oh my, you can do anything. You know, he didn't get to become a firefighter, but in so many ways he really was, and it was neat the way that he was honored in that way. So he was a great big teacher for me too.
Yeah, I mean, even though he wasn't a firefighter, it did sound like he became part of that community.
He absolutely was part of that community. He volunteered for them. He was there multiple times throughout the week. He would help to clean things up for them. They would sometimes let him go on a call, you know, with them. So, you know, he was determined. He had such a good heart. He was so friendly. He didn't let his disabilities hold him back. In fact, it really kind of, I think, in his uniqueness, I don't know, it just made his life really such a beautiful example for me. And I think that's why I got into this work and into this field is very much because of him.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't mean to harp on this, but I do think people are interested, especially with how does scoliosis affect your life? I mean, it sounds like it doesn't stop you from doing very much or anything.
Well, thank you, Jason. No, you know, it's actually, and this is what I tell all of the kids that I work with. You know, we've all got our stuff, and we've got to work with it. We've got opportunities, and whatever our stuff is, whether it's neurodiversity, you know, whether it's scoliosis, it's ultimately a vehicle for our transformation, and it can ultimately be the best thing about us. It's how we interface with it, and I decided. At the same time that I went into the field of autism and in the work that I was doing, you know, I was told by a group of surgeons that I needed to have surgery and have rods put along my spine and that would fuse my spine into place and wouldn't allow me to twist or bend forward or bend backward. And I thought, well, if that's what has to be, then so be it. But I didn't have the feeling that that's what had to be. And so I really dove into yoga, and I dove into this, through yoga, deepened understanding of my body. You know, because I had worn my back brace, I'd become kind of disconnected from my body. It wasn't a very safe place to be. And, you know, I felt deformed. I didn't feel like I fit in. And so yoga was this invitation, along with some of the incredible teachers that I worked with, to really start to move back into this sacred body space and to learn very intimately from the inside out what my spine, what my pelvis, what my shoulder girdle was actually doing. And, you know, it's taken years and years and years of loving kindness toward myself. You know, initially it was very hard to move, you know, into my body to see, to really look and see what was there. And I think this is kind of the recipe for all of us, all of the stuff that we've got to work with, you know. We first got to see it, and we've got to be able to see it and hold ourselves lovingly and with compassion. And as we start to be in that practice of really seeing ourselves more clearly and more honestly, And when we're doing that, we're holding ourselves lovingly as we see ourselves. Amazing transformation starts to happen. It's only through awareness that change, genuine change, is actually available. And so, you know, as I became more aware of how my spine was twisting and shifting from one side to the other, through my yoga practice, I was able to start to make adjustments and move my body into greater alignment. And I stand upright, my shoulders are balanced, my pelvis and hips are balanced and even. I'm so fortunate in this way. I have a major curve in my spine, and when I bend over, there it is. It's not going away. but it's definitely something that I can work with. And my body has changed incredibly over the years. I went from having a real crookedness in my shoulders and a twist in my pelvis to being able to actually level some of that out through this practice of ultimately awareness, you know, of really, really being able to see myself and then start to make adjustments and modifications. And so I also teach yoga for people who have scoliosis and really try to invite them into that place of loving awareness, deepened awareness of themselves. And that's what I'm doing with the kids too. You know, neurodiversity, it's not a curse. It's just what you get to work with and ultimately what can transform and be the very best part of your life, be one of the most unique, beautiful things about who you are and what you have to give to this world.
Yeah, I think
thanks for asking that question.
Yeah, no problem. That was a great answer. I mean, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Oh, Jason, I'm just so delighted. I want to say to you, thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for you know, really transforming, you know, your experience of autism into something that's so positive and that's reaching and touching so many people. I think that you're really a part of this wave that's ushering in for greater society more acceptance and more tolerance and greater understanding of what neurodiversity is. You know, and when we have more understanding, we tend to have a lot more compassion. You know, we tend to have a lot more acceptance, and we see ourselves in other people and vice versa. And I want to say thank you to you. Your website is incredible, and what you're putting out into the world in terms of support and also in terms of just awareness and understanding is huge, and I really admire you and respect what it is that you're doing, and I'm so grateful today to have had the opportunity to be a small part of this force that you're putting out into the world, sharing your uniqueness, sharing your differences, and doing so in such a positive way. So thank you.
Thank you. And I mean, I love what you're doing too. It's such a great way to be able to work with people. You're doing working with people personally and sort of being able to show people to build confidence and to build relationships. And in some ways, it sounds like building that acceptance of themselves and what's going on positively and sometimes what doesn't always come easily.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a great day.
I will, and take good care. I'll talk to you again.
Talk to you again.